from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. It's a Wednesday. It's a Monday-ass Wednesday today, I'll tell you that.
We are so close to Kyle's favorite day of the week. We just aren't there yet, Kyle.
Right around the corner. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are going to talk a lot of basketball today, as we typically do on this show. But I got to tell you, the Amon-Ra St. Brown contract with the Lions and what that means for Brandon Ayuk is really clanging around in my head a lot today.
Yeah,
that's where we got to start.
It's a little bit of a stress, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But the more I'm of two minds with it, because there's and I'm sure you know you go through this, James, and you go through this, listener. Whether you're listening on 1320 AM on the free Odyssey app or checking us out on YouTube and Twitch, we appreciate you for hanging out with us. But however you're listening to us, you surely, when a team has a decision to make, you look at it from, here's what I would do. But then also you have that person in the back of your mind that's like, yeah, but here's how the team typically operates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's happened with this Brandon Ayuk situation, we'll set the table real quick. Devontae Smith for the Eagles, 2021 draft pick, got a 3-year, $75 million extension from Philly.
Okay.
That tied him for the fourth highest paid receiver in the league, I think, on an average annual value. And his number's really identical to Brandon Ayuk's. And you go, okay, that's about the range the 49ers are looking at. But then Amon-Ra St. Brown, and we don't have a structure on the St. Brown contract yet, so we don't know exactly what this means, but Ian Rappaport reported that he got a 4-year extension worth more than $120 million with $77 million guaranteed.
Yep.
Now, is that $77 guaranteed for injury? Is that $120 plus million, including the final 2 years of his rookie contract? That is unclear. What is clear, though, is that Amon-Ra St. Brown got paid. And if he wound up getting actually more than $30 million a year in new money, that may push the 49ers beyond the point they're comfortable going in paying Brandon Ayuk.
Okay, so my first question, it's tough because I really like Brandon Ayuk.
Yes.
But I also don't think he's Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't know that he is as impactful on the field. I think he's close. When you brought up Smith, I think that's a better comp. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's in between those two players, but I don't know that I can put him as the same exact. I mean, we're talking about a guy who had 1,515 yards receiving last year, 120 catches, 10 touchdowns. And while I like Ayuk and I think he's a great young wide receiver, I don't know that it's apples and oranges here. I mean, it's apples and apples.
I kind of think it is. Amon-Ra St. Brown is really, really good, but he has 400 more yards and one more touchdown than Brandon Ayuk over the last 3 years. 400 more yards, one more touchdown, and 106 more catches. It's a volume thing.
Yeah.
And if you're the 49ers, I think that trading Brandon Ayuk would be a colossal mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I went from, yeah, you can't pay him that, to now when you look at their roster over the next couple of years, if you are going to pay Brock Purdy, which I think they're going to do, you cannot be letting his best weapon walk out the door before he even hits year three.
No.
What are you doing? George Kittle is going to be gone. Deebo Samuel is going to be gone. Christian McCaffrey is going to be gone all by the time Brock Purdy is hitting his prime and hitting the expensive years of this contract that they're about to pay him. At least I assume that they're going to pay him.
Of course.
And you're going to go into that with nothing in the cupboard? You have an all-pro receiver on your team. How are you not paying him? Trent Williams is going to be gone.
Kyle, I agree 100%. Like, I want them to pay Ayuk without any question.
I don't know what they're... I don't know what... And maybe... Look, let me back up. Maybe they will pay him. Maybe the 49ers have been posturing, going... Mike Silver reported in the San Francisco Chronicle that the 49ers didn't want to go well above $25 million, which is now, if Ayuk's camp is looking at the St. Brown deal, what they may have to do. I don't know how, if you're the 49ers, you look at that and go, actually, we can get more value out of the, let's pick the Jags here, out of the 17th pick in the draft, along with our 31st, we can get more value out of that than out of a wide receiver who has proven that he's one of the
top 10 or 12
best wide receivers in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And getting better. I don't understand it, dude. I don't get it.
Well, I think part of the problem too is that when you wait and you leave a door open for this, then bad things can happen, which is basically what just happened. But I'd also say this, like, we've seen the Niners posture before. Like, we saw it with the Bosa deal, and it was just posturing and waiting and waiting and waiting. And that totally impacted last season. I don't care what anybody
100%.
Says. It totally hurt the whole first half of the season. No, and Bosa never looked like Bosa the entire year. So, but when the deal finally got released, it was like, whoa. Like, any reporting on it, everything else, it wasn't even all that close. It was a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I was taken aback by, at the end of the day, they did pay. They paid the dollar. And that's why, like, why are you waiting? Why are you waiting? Why are you waiting?
That's it, dude.
And so that's where I'm slightly concerned here that, again, when you leave this door open, you should have looked at the deal that again, Devontae Smith got. And as soon as that deal went down, you should have gone, okay, let's bump up $2 or $3 million and let's go with that. Let's go 27, let's go $28 million a year and get the deal done.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in a situation where, you know, now a big time contract came out, and how do you match it?
Right, right. So here's they have used the start of training camp as the soft deadline for all their deals. Kittle, Warner, yeah. Deebo, Nick Bosa. Turns out Bosa's deadline was the first week of the season.
Yeah.
But they've used that as a soft deadline for all these deals. And you're right, man. That means you could have a holdout or a hold-in. That's what Deebo did. He, like, showed up but didn't do anything. You could have a holdout or hold-in where these guys are missing portions of camp. Mm-hmm. And John Lynch got asked about that at his pre-draft press conference, and he was like, yeah, we want to clean that up a little bit. And it's, then do it now. Then clean it up now. Because, like you said, chances are, if you're going to wait and go, hey, we're not trading Brandon Ayuk, because they have him on his fifth-year option.
Mm-hmm.
They have him under contract for this year. So they could, in theory, be like, eh, we don't want to do it this year. You play, or take a year off and you don't have your year vest and now you're back in the same spot next offseason. So the 49ers could theoretically do that. But it's, we all know where this is headed.
Yeah.
We all know that if he's going to stay, you're going to pay him. Why not just do it in April to save a couple million bucks? To structure it in a way that, okay, yeah, we can get out from under the deal in 2 years. Like, dude.
Yeah. I'm with you, Kyle. Like,
it would be a disaster if they trade him.
It's
flat
tough.
Out disaster.
It's tough because you keep saying, just pay the guy. But how many times do we say that about the Niners? Like, you have to, they have so many of those guys
mm-hmm.
that you have to pay.
Sure.
And eventually, I mean, you can't have one of the highest paid left tackles and one of the highest paid defensive ends and one of the highest paid middle linebackers and one of the highest paid running backs, if not the highest paid, and one of the highest paid wide receivers.
No doubt.
We keep saying this, though. Like, how many of those players can you have? And eventually, like, the tap does run dry, but this just isn't the guy to run dry on.
Yes, yeah, let Talanoa Hufanga walk.
Yeah.
Let Dre Greenlaw walk. Let Javon Hargrave out of his deal early.
Yeah.
Or not let him out, but cut him early from that deal. Don't start restructuring him and pushing money into the future.
Mm.
That's what they did with Eric Armstead this offseason. They said, hey, take a pay cut. He said, no thanks. Okay, you got to go then.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, this is what happens. Sometimes you have to let good players go, but you cannot let a player like Brandon Ayuk go in this very specific instance because everything you mentioned is correct. And if Deebo Samuel was in the first year of his deal, and if Christian McCaffrey was 24, and if Trent Williams was 26, then yeah, okay, let's talk about it differently.
Yeah, then you have to make tough decisions about a young core.
Right.
Yeah.
But Trent Williams is not going to be on this roster 3 or 4 years from now. Not likely to be on this roster 3 or 4 years from now.
I mean, if he is, that would be incredible.
It'd be remarkable.
Be like a 40-year-old man just pushing people around.
I'm not going to rule it out. But Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle turns 31 this year. Deebo Samuel is really, really good player still. But are you banking on him being All-Pro 2021 Deebo Samuel again? I'm not.
No.
I'm definitely not.
And Ayuk's 26, man.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It comes down to this for me. If you're not paying Brandon Ayuk, then who are you paying? You're just gonna keep an aging George Kittle on the books forever? You're gonna keep an aging Deebo Samuel on the books forever? At some point you have to transition to this new core. If you're going to bet on Brock Purdy, who I like, I think Brock Purdy's a good player. But I also don't think that you can go, yeah, hey, look what Patrick Mahomes did with Rashi Rice and a bag of carrots. Like, you can't do that with Purdy. He's not that level of quarterback.
No.
There has to be some support system there. And it's like, dude, Brandon Ayuk is it. They have rapport. You know that he can produce in this system already. What if you're not paying him, who are you paying? Because at some point, this new Fred Warner can bridge that gap. Nick Bosa can bridge that gap. Brandon Ayuk should be also bridging that gap.
Yes.
Because Christian McCaffrey's not. George Kittle is not. Deebo Samuel is not. Trent Williams is not. And you, look no further than like the Golden State Warriors and where they sit by going like, oh, hang on, we're going to hang on to the vets. We're going to hang on to the vets. We're going to try and squeeze every last bit out of this. And here they are with a bunch of expensive veterans and a tough build ahead of them. That's where the 49ers would be headed if they're like, yeah, we'll just trade Brandon Ayuk and we'll see if we can find a receiver in the first or second round who can replicate that. Like, no, man. Maybe Ladd McConkey is awesome. But you know Brandon Ayuk is an all-pro caliber receiver.
And you're also a franchise who has missed on wide receivers so many times.
So many. And like, every team does, by the way. It is so hard to find really good wide receivers, high-level wide receivers.
Hey, man, you can draft wide receivers in the top five and miss.
Yes.
Like, that it's
shout out to Corey Davis.
One of the strangest positions there ever was.
Yep.
Like, you can miss on a wide receiver all day long.
Yep.
You didn't miss. You found a good one.
Yes.
You know, this is not, you know, like, name that bust that was a 49er.
AJ
like,
Jenkins.
Well, I mean, you can even
Rashawn
say, like,
Woods.
Yeah. J.J. Stokes played for a while, but that doesn't mean he was great.
Decent career, not a top 10 pick.
No.
So that's where, and we gotta get going here, but that's where you can find a number two, number three receiver later in the draft for sure, but a bona fide one like Brandon Ayuk is, those are really, really hard to find. Especially one who has such a good rapport with the young quarterback that you're about to give a bag to.
That's right. And who went to college right down the street from us, Kyle.
He went to Sierra College. Sacramento's own Brandon Ayuk.
That's right. Wolverines!
All right, we got to hit a break. We'll continue talking about this Brandon Ayuk stuff, but we'll have plenty of Kings for you coming up as well. I actually think there's not apples to apples comparison to make with the Kings.
Okay.
But I'm going to try and very vaguely loop in this Brandon Ayuk stuff to a Kings conversation. We'll talk about it next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Now, Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Let's just trade everyone tonight.
Trade everybody?
Yeah, trade everyone. Why not?
I'm in. Get the trade machine out. Get it fired up. Get it working. Kyle's quickly realizing he doesn't need a trade machine. James can work James all the trades in his head.
This. Like, yeah. I gotta tell you, I'm not hitting you up randomly on a Thursday night when I'm just perusing the trade machine. I'm not gonna be like, hey, does this work? I'm just gonna enter it in the trade machine.
But the trade machine is not always accurate. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's so complex.
Who is more, let's loop the Kings and it's Brandon Ayuk thing.
Okay.
Because I think Sacramento might be not in a similar spot with Keegan Murray, but I do think that when you look at big moves for the Kings this offseason, if they are going to make a swing that dramatically alters the state of their roster,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the piece, right? We talked about it last offseason a lot with Keegan Murray, and it was just like, Keegan is not on the table. That trade is not there. Same thing at the trade deadline. That trade is not there. Is that the case this year as well for you?
Oh, I believe it is. Yeah, I think that the way that the team is going to approach Keegan is very specific. He's not on the table for mm-hmm. it. You have to see who he becomes in year three. And that's where we talk about with wide receivers. Wide receivers and NBA talent usually follows a very similar path.
Mm-hmm.
By year four, you know somebody's who they are.
Yeah.
Right? But year one, you see the bare bones. Mm-hmm. Year two, you see the jump. Mm-hmm. Year three, you see the second jump, which is solidifying the first jump.
Mm-hmm.
And then year four is like, this is who I got. Right? Yeah. And there can be some variance. A guy can get a little bit better. But really, that year four is when you're like, okay. And maybe this process with a guy like Keegan is pushed forward a little bit
mm-hmm.
because Keegan was a 21-year-old kid coming out of college.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that the Kings believe that. Like, everything I've always, when in conversations I've had on the inside, is that they believe that both the Murray twins were very young for their age. I know that sounds weird, but...
It sounds really weird.
Yeah, so...
Well,
I think part of it...
Developmentally?
Well, like body-wise and everything else. Like, they were late bloomers.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they grew late, there was like, there's still a lot of work you can do to change their body and who they are as a player.
Sure. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And
that's where, you know, you look at LeBron James at... You could look at LeBron at 16 and like, he was so incredibly developed at 16.
Mm-hmm.
When he came into the league at 18, he came in at like 6'8", 260.
Insane.
Like,
totally
yeah,
insane.
We've never seen anything like LeBron James.
Yeah.
Like, it's the basically Karl Malone's body, but a guy who can, like, first of all, dribble.
Right.
But the also
high-end athlete.
Can sky over the top of everybody
right.
and do these incredible things. And never for some, like, he's defied everything. The way that he's been able to continue that is shocking because of how big he is. You would expect mm-hmm. that, like, the shock absorbers in his legs would not be able to hold up all these years.
A la Joel Embiid.
It's just not the case. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's like very clear, like with NBA talent and with NFL talent, the way that they develop
mm-hmm.
into the league and how they become who they're going to become. I think Brandon Ayuk is a perfect example. Look at his career path, what he was in year one, mm-hmm. year two, year three, year four. Now we see him. Year four, he's a stud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're hoping for Keegan Murray as well. And you can't give up on that because he's so affordable now. And
yeah.
and when you're going to take a big swing, like what you're talking about, you have to remember that like a max rookie extension for Keegan Murray is like $28, $29 million starting salary. And that's mm-hmm. a lot, right?
Yeah.
But it's not 35 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you're trying to mix and match and try to figure out how you're going to build the rest of your roster.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the possibility he doesn't reach that height and that he's more affordable for you. And so, yeah, I think it is a good comp, what you're talking about here. But at a certain point, like in the NBA, you just pay them. It's like the understanding of the next step in business.
Mm-hmm.
Like rookie scale extension, are you a max player? Are you 75%, 80% mm-hmm. of a max? Like, what are we doing here? You offer something and you get a deal done.
I think one of the big differences, too, is the 49ers are talking about, when we talk about Brandon Ayuk, we're talking about a trade for a draft pick, a trade for this unknown quantity. Whereas when you bring up a potential Keegan Murray deal, it would be for a known, you would be getting like a like an all-star NBA player back.
Yes.
Like that would be the, that's a little bit of the difference. Like, you know for sure, hey, we're adding a player who's going to give us X, Y, and Z in the NBA because that is what he has done in X amount of years in the NBA. That's much different than, yeah, hey, gonna send Keegan to, or any NBA player to a team for a draft pick, and we're gonna cross our fingers. Like, that's yeah, going backwards. That's hustling backwards.
Yeah, the only way you're doing that in the NBA is if it's for like a top two or three pick and a great draft. And, yeah, and that's not this situation.
No, not at all.
And look, I think the NFL, like the way that we've seen it play out for the 49ers, is it hasn't worked when they've traded. Like, look at the DeForest Buckner trade. Like, that guy has been a like all-pro tackle for years.
Yeah, good player.
And you gave up on him for a draft pick, and that draft pick didn't work out at all. And
That's something I'm wondering if the 49ers let inform their decision-making here with Brandon Ayuk. Because they tried to get cute with Buckner.
Yeah.
They tried to say, hey, let's see if we can get him for this low offer. And Buckner went, no, I'm one of the three best players at my position in the sport.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to get a bag. And the Niners said, okay, great. What we're going to do is we're going to keep Arik Armstead and Jimmy Ward instead. And the sum of those two pieces will be greater than DeForest Buckner.
Mm-hmm.
And cost the same. It's a money ball type of move. Like, we're going to be better than Buckner in the aggregate, right? That's the
yes.
whole.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jimmy Ward, good player. Arik Armstead, good player. But I don't think over the couple of years they were with the team without DeForest Buckner, I don't think that they were as good as Buckner would have been for the 49ers or as impactful. And so I'm wondering if they let that inform their decision-making here with Ayuk, where they go, yeah, hey, we tried this and it didn't work. So let's just pay Ayuk. And if that means losing Tre'Varius Ward or Talanoa Hufanga or Dre Greenlaw or Aaron Banks, their left guard, if it means losing those guys, then so be it. We have the all-pro in the building, and it'll be easier to replace those pieces than Ayuk.
Yeah, and so that's where when you take like NBA comps,
mm-hmm.
like, it's really, really difficult to take, let's just, like, to take Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes and trade them for a star-level player. Take right. two guys that are good role players
mm-hmm.
and trade them for an all-star.
And that's why, just to pause you real quick, I want you to continue this thought, but that's why I bring up Keegan.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think they should or will trade him, but if you go want to go get an all-star, that's why, because of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes are the pieces to get you that. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point you have to be really honest about who your players are, mm-hmm. right? First of all, like, cardinal sin of the NBA is don't overpay your own players. Never. Like, that's the cardinal rule. Never overpay your own players, which is something that Monty McNair lives by, and it's something that he learned from his Daryl time Morey. Yeah, with Daryl Morey. And so, like, key number one, don't overpay. But also be honest about who your young players are as they're coming up. And I think that's something we've also seen Monty look at and say, look, hey, I don't think that I can get De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton to fit together, to bond together, to be a legitimate backcourt together long term. Defensively, it would be a mess. Offensively, they're fighting for the ball and without fighting for the ball, just like looking at each other and not really wanting to address what's happening in the room. And so he looked at a young player who, again, people need to remember, yeah, Tyrese Haliburton has become this great player that's, you know, probably going to make all NBA, even though in this year specifically, he does not deserve to be all NBA. We can get into that later. Dude. But I just think that it's a joke the way that he's perceived. But you also have to remember that Tyrese Haliburton as a young player, like, he was good for the Kings, and the outline of who he was going to be was there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also talking about a guy that when you traded him, he was averaging 14.3 points per game. I mean, it wasn't like he was a superstar at that point. And mm-hmm. yeah, you have to give up something to get something. But so I think that, McNair has proven that he's willing to like look at a player and cash him in early mm-hmm. or look at a player and move away from him early if it's not working. And we'll just have to see how that works out. You know, again, at this point, like I don't think they're going anywhere with Keegan Murray for a long time.
We got to step aside real quick, but we're just going to put a pin in this conversation. We'll continue it next on The Insiders. We are sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And also want to remind you, stay locked in because we're going to give away $500 today. We're going to give you a chance to win $500 today. Ooh. We're going to give you a keyword coming up. So make sure to stay tapped in to get that keyword, which you'll enter at ESPN1320.com to win $500. All right. We'll be right back in a second on ESPN 1320.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
All right, I had to write something down.
Oh?
I have an idea. Just based on something we were talking about at the break. Well, let's do it right now. So we've been talking about the Brandon Ayuk potential trade
mm-hmm.
from the 49ers. There's no reports yet, but the assumption has been that the 49ers don't want to go above or much above $25 million a year for Ayuk. Amon-Ra St. Brown from the Lions, no structure on his deal yet, but the initial reports say that it is north of $30 million annually. It makes him the highest paid receiver on an average annual value basis. Highest paid receiver in the league. And the prevailing thought is, well, that's the contract Ayuk is going to want. That's beyond the 49ers' puke point. So they are going to trade him to try and get a first round pick back instead of letting him play out his contract and then let him walk for a future third round comp pick.
Yeah, with the draft like 2 days away.
No, tomorrow.
A day away.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
less than 36 hours. What are we? 24 hours will be 10. And so math, 7, about 31 hours of the draft. Yeah, so it's going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be like the Debo thing where, yeah, hey, the Jets are on the clock at 10, and this trade might go down with the Jets and Debo Samuel.
Mm.
And it has not, or it did not. So it may be that on draft day, just starting at like the 14th pick or whatever. Once Roma Dunze goes off the board, or whoever the third receiver is, whether it's Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr., whoever that is that goes off the board third, I think it's just going to be Ayuk watch from that point forward. So we've been talking about trades, and we moved that to the Kings. And okay, if Brandon Ayuk is available, would the Kings make Keegan Murray available this offseason? But then we started talking about a potential Malik Monk replacement if Monk leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to fill that six-man role. Maybe it's Davion Mitchell. Maybe it's Keon Ellis. My guess is they would go try and fill that spot with a different player than one of those two.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, okay. Like if the Kings lose Malik Monk, it's now your task. You have two options, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, you can either try to find another Malik Monk, or you can be like super aggressive and try to find a big time starting level shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
Like a guy who averages 18 to 20 points per game, who walks in the door and is like, you have a starting backcourt of again, De'Aaron Fox and player X.
Mm-hmm.
And then Keon Ellis would move to the bench and you'd figure out what you're doing there. Or Kevin Herter would move to the bench, whatever. I think that if the Kings are going to take the route of going and finding a player that can fill the role of Malik Monk, they kind of have an advantage because, you know, first of all, Sacramento's never been a hotbed for free agency. We all know that, right? But if you're walking out into the market and saying, look what we just did with Malik Monk. You know, we took Malik Monk, who was a guy who made $1.7 million a year before.
Mm-hmm.
And we've helped convert him into a $80 to a $100 million player. That's something that young players, that a player that was in a similar situation to Monk or a player who's coming up and has some of these same skills, mm-hmm. would probably look at and go, huh, maybe I could replicate what Monk did there. Maybe I could find a way to become that player. And maybe I could like make my name with a team like the Kings, who have already shown that they value that type of player, that type of position, you know? And so I don't know. Like, I think it's an interesting way to walk into the offseason where you're going to have options. Like, no one is going to be a Malik Monk replacement, like, spot on. But that doesn't mean you just throw your hands up and say, okay, we give up.
Chris Duarte for Bones Highland straight across. Who says no?
Mm.
Both have team options.
See, that's an intriguing.
I love Bones Highland.
Yeah, I think Bones Highland is a guy that I would put on my short list of players that I would go out and like look for. But what you need is a playmaker. You need somebody who makes plays for himself, makes plays for others. You need a guy who's that can be a lob threat, that can be a lob threat as a passer in mm-hmm. the pick and roll situation. You just need that style of player. And, you know, we talked a little bit about guys like Peyton Pritchard or TJ McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're variable, like variants on what type of player, what level of player you can find. But I think there's also like probably a lot more that we're just not looking at that you could try and see if they could find themselves
mm-hmm.
here in Sacramento the way that Monk did, you know?
I'll keep throwing out names just throughout the offseason.
Okay.
But ideally, Malik Monk resigns and they don't have to worry about replacing him. But based on how the Magic have looked in the playoffs, they could use a shot creator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's been big yikes from the Magic. We'll talk some about the playoffs coming up. But while we're talking trades,
mm-hmm.
I want to revisit a trade that didn't happen.
Oh.
This is we stick with trades as the theme of today's show.
Okay.
The Pascal Siakam trade. that didn't happen for the Kings.
Yeah.
Knowing what you know now, I'm giving you the benefit of hindsight. Knowing what you know now about how the Kings season ended and how everything went down, and knowing that Pascal Siakam is averaging 36.5 points a game on and averaging 36.5, 12, and 4 through the Pacers' first two playoff games.
Okay.
Are you executing a deal for Pascal Siakam at this trade deadline? Knowing everything you know now.
It's so tough, man, because first of all, he didn't want to be here. Like, I think that that's something that kind of like came out in the wash after the after the Kings like pulled the plug and said we're not in on, because you got to remember how that all played out. Toronto was in town.
Yes.
Like the Raptors were in town. Like there was a lot of talk of whether a deal was going to happen like that day. Masai Ujiri and their entire front office was in Sacramento. And I think one of the biggest things for me was that he just really didn't, like, it wasn't something he was totally interested in. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not, and the other thing is he wanted to get paid. So there are a handful of reasons why I wouldn't want to go and get Siakam. And number one, I didn't think he was a perfect fit. I thought he was a better ball player than OG Anunoby. Mm-hmm. But we just kept comparing those two. But I know what it would have done to Keegan Murray and how it would have like stopped his growth as an offensive player, slowed his growth to a crawl as an offensive player. And then I just don't know that it's like, while it's worked out a little bit and they're in the playoffs, I don't know that he's the type of player that works in the system that the Kings have. And how do you rebuild your team on the fly? And what was the cost? And, you know, again, the murmurs I heard was that Malik Monk was like, Toronto came back and at the last minute wanted Malik Monk part of the trade, and the Kings were like, that's not happening.
Along with Harrison Barnes and Kevin Herter,
I don't know, like, we don't know the whole package the way
so
it
would have been keeping Keegan but letting Malik go,
probably.
Okay. And
then risking not being able to sign him this summer, or literally having him say, hey, I want a 4-year 150 or 200. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, wait, we can't afford a $45 or $50 million player in addition to the other players we have. Like, the Kings can. Mm-hmm. They can become a luxury tax team for sure. But that's a big ask. And there's no way to know that you're going to take that leap and you're going to be that team. So, yeah.
I think I might have done it, man. I think they get to the playoffs if they have Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
Especially knowing what we know now, that down the stretch they didn't have Kevin Herter or Malik Monk anyway.
I would say, like, not only, like, for this season, sure. Like, that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that probably you are a playoff team, but you don't know the long-term ramifications. You don't know if he's going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might end up losing a bunch of pieces. Or he does stick around and he wants a lot of money, and then you're basically pot committed on a very specific roster that you cannot do anything with. Like, there wouldn't be other movable.
You'd have to make a commitment for sure.
Yeah. Like, completely. And I think that if you didn't give up Monk in that trade, I think there wouldn't be really a way to add Monk afterwards. If you've already got to pay this other guy, you know, X amount of dollars, and he does say yes, then you got to try to bring Monk back. And next thing you know, you're looking at $200 million payroll like that, and you're above the second apron. And we're talking about, like,
but you also would have been in the, at least I think, I don't want to act like I have a crystal ball and know. You also probably would have been in the playoffs this year, though.
You probably would have been
playing
basketball in the
playoffs right now.
No, I get that. But would you be a championship team? Because that's what you basically are committing to.
With De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis and Pascal Siakam?
Maybe. And Keegan Murray and Malik Monk, maybe you're a contending team, maybe, but maybe you're not. And that's the problem. And I know there's no surefire, yeah, this is going to work out or it's not going to work out. There's no way to know until you have it in practice, but it's still a huge gamble.
No doubt. No, and that's what, again, maybe they make that trade and they get to the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
They win a series, but it winds up screwing them long term. Yeah, maybe. But I think at some point, like, you got to hit the go button on something.
No, totally. I think that there is an all-in move. There is a move where, yeah, where Monty McNair pushes all of his chips in and says, okay, I'm in.
Over the next, over, by the way, and I'm talking about over the next season or two.
Oh, no, it has to be now. Yeah,
I'm not dealing with a core that's 22 years old.
You might have a year here where you've got to make that move. But it's got to be the right person and the right all-in move. And I think that Monty understands that. And it can't be so detrimental that there's no way to escape it if you do an all-in move. If you're giving up two or three first-round picks and you're giving up, you know, rotational pieces and players that you value already, and you're going all-in, that better work. And, you know, it worked with Sabonis, but you got to remember that's like a no risk. It's not even a high risk, high reward.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to at least
make
you...
That was putting your plan in motion.
Yeah, it's basically, but you could always move away from that down the road if that, you know, if it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you would have given up Halliburton. And you also needed to, like, get Sabonis under contract long term, which... Again, they did. Mm-hmm. All of those things happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's hard to look at the Sabonis deal and think, oh, well, this is going to go totally awry. I mean, Sabonis is a very, very, very good... He's an all-NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
So you got one of them, and it helped you create a second one. Mm-hmm. It helped open the door for Fox to become that guy as well. Yeah, so now, like, how do you put the pieces around him? And that's always going to be the question. How do you keep building? And, you know, again, I don't think that they've done a lot of pushing the envelope forward. They've been waiting for the home run. Mm-hmm. And like, someone like me has been waiting for a single and a double, waiting for the home run. Like, I want ducks on the pond when the home run comes.
Yeah, you don't want to be Mike Trout with 9 homers and 12 RBIs.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, that's realistically, you're looking for the moment where you're not just taking a swing and you know, scoring a one-time playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at something that's sustainable, and which is what I think Sabonis is, and I think Fox is, and I think Keegan Murray is. Those are sustainable pieces long-term.
Sure.
How do you add the other sustainable pieces that make sense? And then at some point, you're going to have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they know that, but you have to pay for a team that you know is going to be there, a team that you know is going to be good.
Yeah.
And that's not something I think the Kings know at this point, that they're not sure what it is they have. They know they have, like, really good foundation,
mm-hmm.
but there has to be more to that foundation.
It is so wild how much of this is riding on Keegan Murray becoming a really good player. He's already a really good player, becoming, like, an all-star caliber player.
Yeah, I mean...
That to me is the leap he has to make. He took a step this year for me. He got better for, like, no question.
Yeah.
Keegan Murray this year was significantly better than Keegan Murray last year. But I'm talking like a leap where he is a 20 points a night type of guy, and he is creating shots,
mm-hmm.
and he is becoming a problem for a team like the New Orleans Pelicans, where all of a sudden they have to use some of their size to try and slow him down. And that's the kind of leap that he has to make for me for all of this to work. Because if he doesn't, if he just moves laterally next year,
mm-hmm.
and this is another reason why I bring him up, is if he moves laterally next year, now you're talking, okay, hey, maybe we have to move on from Keegan, but now what's his value? And that's why it's like, man, that's what makes this so tough. And the Kings are very clearly, based on everything that you've said, and I'm sure based on conversations you've had, they're committed to this. They're like, hey, number 13 is going to be in the building, and we're going to bank on some kind of leap from him. Mm-hmm. We believe he's going to make a leap. There is a deeply held belief in their building in him.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how it's going to be, unless, of course, like we talked about last offseason, unless, of course, some insane... unrealistic trade materializes, then you're going, okay, let's rethink this. But
it would have to be such a over the top move. Like, I'm not saying that move's not out there. Like, because
weird stuff happens.
I think it is. I think that those moves are out there where it's like, oh man, you have no choice. You have to go ahead and push all in,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, Donovan Mitchell becomes available this summer and he's willing to stick around with his good friend De'Aaron Fox and sign a long term deal. And again, that's where you're looking at that big money deal. That's where you have to go, okay, like, look, we have a longstanding belief in what we're doing and this guy as a player and Keegan Murray as a player, but you always have that, okay, well, what if this happens, this were to happen? And you have to be willing to make a move that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's basketball. You don't just get to load up all the good players onto one team unless you're the Miami Heat or the, you know, Los Angeles Lakers and their attempts.
I'm glad you brought up Donovan Mitchell specifically. Because, you know, watching Cavs magic like a sicko. And I'm watching him going, hey, man, I know we've brought up Donovan Mitchell before, but I was like, Darius Garland's kind of nice, too. I like Darius Garland. And so I hit up my buddy, Justin Rowan, who hosts the Chase Down Cavs podcast. I believe it's like the official Cavs team podcast.
Okay.
And yeah, part of the Cavs media family. And so I hit him up and I was like, hey, is this an insane thought? Either Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland. And he basically was like, yeah, no, it's unlikely they let either of those guys walk unless one of them demands out.
Well, yeah, I get you, but that's someone who's that's too close to him. It. Yeah, yeah, I think Darius Garland will be there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Donovan is he hasn't made it clear out there in the real world to everyone that he's gonna get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got next season left at $35.4 million, and then a player option for $37 million the next year.
Mm-hmm.
The belief around the league is that they're gonna have a tough time keeping him after next season.
So he said, this is what I got from, again, this is somebody who covers the Cavs and is part of the Cavs media family. Justin Rowan, the Chase Down, check out their pod. He said, they've just been so good, talking about Garland and Mitchell. He said they've been so good in their minutes together over the last 2 years, and Mitchell can't be a full-time point guard. And then he said, I'm rereading this back. I asked, are we sure, like, is it some kind of thing that Donovan Mitchell is going to go? And he said, I thought he was, but it's been months of hearing the extension is coming and a lot of projecting. So that's kind of where that sits.
Hmm.
But like you said, if the belief around the league is different.
Well, like, look, they can offer an extension. Like, mm-hmm. They will offer an extension this summer. That doesn't mean he's going to sign that extension.
Sure.
Like, it is what it is. Like, a player, once you get out of your second contract,
mm-hmm.
you have the option to go wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
The first contract, not so much. You're a restricted free agent. And, I mean, you can sign, like, a weird deal, or you can take it to the fifth year and play on, you know, you can risk everything. That's not a good idea. But, like, realistically, most NBA players are locked up into their original franchise for the first 8 years of their career. And then mm-hmm. it's like no holds barred. Yeah. So like, where is he going to go? Like, he's going to have like his options. Like, if he wants to go play in New York City, where, you know, hometown type stuff, that's one thing, you know, but I don't know. Like, that's a guy that I'm looking at. That's a guy I'm looking at. I'm looking at.
And that's the type of, that's the type of move we're talking about. Not all due respect to OG Anunoby, but not OG Anunoby.
No,
really,
I'm not giving up Keegan Murray in any of the deals that we've heard mentioned around the Kings for the last couple of years.
No, me neither.
No, you're not doing it. But there is another level of player that you have to mm-hmm. consider and whether or not you know, it would make sense to your team. And
I would love to see this offseason, above all things, this doesn't necessarily mean slamming the panic button and trade everybody and mm-hmm. try and win a title next year with some patchwork roster that's put together for a season. It's not that. No. But I do think there needs to be an uptick in urgency for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, the urgency is now. In all honesty, I think it's right now. Yeah. This group really has to like look at this as not a failed season, but as a season that really showed you who you are and where you are in the hierarchy of the Western Conference.
I'd call it information gathering.
It was a very, very big information gathering season.
Yeah, you had to, based on last year, or two seasons ago? The first Mike Brown season.
Okay, last year. Last season.
It's still this season, yeah. So last season. There are people in the NFL who, once the new league year starts, calls the previous season last season, and calls like the 2024 season this season.
Mm.
And I'm like, nah, man, Brandon Ayuk had, whatever it was, 1,200 yards this season.
This season.
Next season is in September.
No.
Like,
no
stop.
No.
But anyways, it was so good last season
that you had to go into this year going, hey, you have to ride this out and see what it looks like with another year.
Yeah.
This is the first time these guys, can they all take a collective step? And they didn't, and they ran into some injury stuff, and it just didn't quite work out. But you learned a lot about what this team needs moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super valuable, because if you go a bunch of different directions after last season, say, okay, we're not going to bring back Harrison Barnes. Okay, we're going to get rid of Kevin Herter now, and we're going to do all, then you may have a disaster on your hands. So I get why they did it this year or last offseason. This offseason got to be different.
No, I get why they did it too, and I think we still walked out of last season understanding what they needed,
mm-hmm.
but you also had to respect how good they were last year and give them an opportunity to build.
I agree.
It's not just that the group of players were, it was the first year together. It was the first year with Mike Brown and his mm-hmm. staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of want to see how it matures and, mm-hmm. and, you know, organically grows. But now you know. And I'd even say you knew in December, you knew in January.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my point of contention, like running it back is one thing, but running it back and then looking at your squad and realizing that it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is something that you should have been able to pick up on pretty quick and not say, hey, I think we'll be okay. We're developing this, or like there became a limitation on this team very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the bad losses to bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
It was some of the losses to teams where you're like, we can't compete with player X, player Y.
Yes.
Like there's a problem here. And you have to be honest with yourself. It's like people who don't know what they don't know, and that, you know, we deal with that all the time. There's, mm-hmm. you know, if the best people are who understand what they don't know, and then they surround themselves with people who know that stuff.
Yes.
And it helps them grow. Well, like that, it's the same thing with the team. Like you look at your team and go, okay, like we don't have a finance guy. Like, where's my finance guy?
Sure.
Like, whatever it is, like, you can look at your squad and say, hey, like, there's something missing here, and we need to go find that ingredient. And it's fine to dabble, and mm-hmm. it's fine to do, like, archetype players and say, mm-hmm. what does player X look like if we plug him in here? Does that mm-hmm. work or not? But that player has to be up to a certain standard when you're a 45 to 50 win team.
Right.
And that's not what we've seen. Like, you still, you got the back end of your bench, the last five players on your bench are really not NBA players yet.
Yeah.
Or anymore.
Yeah.
Or anymore.
Sure.
And that's a problem, because when you have injuries and everything goes wrong, that's what you have to rely on, and that's not okay.
Yeah, man. There's depth they need to build out, and then, like you said, I don't think they're going to go get an all-star via trade this offseason that doesn't involve Keegan.
Yeah.
And that's, okay, great. You can upgrade over Harrison Barnes. And maybe you find a replacement, an adequate replacement for Malik Monk, and you find a more defensive-minded player and trade Kevin Herter for him.
Mm-hmm.
You find an adequate, like, 3-and-D type of player. That's all great. But, again, it comes down to me to Keegan. And if you think he's not going to develop into that all-star caliber player, because what he's going to be is good. Like he is going to be in the league a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a 3-and-D player. He's going to shoot 38%+ probably moving forward. I think this year was a little bit of an anomaly for him shooting wise. He's going to shoot 38%. He's going to play good defense. That's great. But it comes down to that shot creation. Can he be a reliable number two option? And that's what he has to become.
Well, that's just going to. That's going to. It's going to control the ceiling of your team.
Yes.
That's the ceiling right there.
Yep. Yeah. If you told me that Keegan Murray turns into Paul George, then great. You're probably a championship contender over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you told me that he's going to shoot it 13 times a game and average 15-ish points and shoot 36%, I'm less excited.
Yeah.
Good player, but it raises the bar for what you need around him.
Yep.
All right. We'll continue talking about the Kings offseason all summer. That's what we got all spring, all summer.
Yeah.
That's what we got ahead. We'll have some NFL draft for you as well. Want to remind everybody, by the way, that you can listen to the NFL draft right here on ESPN 1320. Thursday, 4 p.m., we got round one. Friday, 4 p.m., we will have day two. That's rounds two and three. And then Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. all the way up to 4 p.m., we will have day three coverage. That's rounds four, five, six, and seven, all the way through Mr. Irrelevant. So 3 days of NFL draft coverage right here on ESPN 1320. We'll be talking about that a little bit today and definitely tomorrow in the lead up. Will the 49ers trade Brandon Ayuk? Maybe. It's going to be a big storyline, and we'll continue talking about that along with the Sacramento Kings here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.